I'm Juan Haynes, senior editor for San Quentin News. The following podcast contains language and descriptions of graphic violence that may not be appropriate for all listeners. Discretion is advised.
So I have a big jar of coffee I'm selling. I have a big jar of coffee. Anybody interested? Are you sick and tired of your cellies just laying around in the house next to you and won't give you any cell time? But I believe if you bought this jar of coffee and share it with your cellie, give him a big, strong shot, I guarantee you he'll get up, he'll jump down, he'll brush his teeth, wash his hair, and he'll get out of there and give you cell time. That's what this big jar of coffee would do. So you guys continue to be difficult if you want to. But if you want to get up and exercise, you're tired of laying up in your bunk, I got you. This big jar of coffee right here is going to get you up and out of that cell in a heartbeat.
You are now listening to San Quentin's Ear Hustle. From PRX's Radiotopia, I am Rahsaan New York Thomas, a resident of San Quentin serving a life sentence.
I'm Nigel Poor. I've been working with the guys at San Quentin State Prison in California for about 8 years.
And together, we're going to take you inside
and back out post-incarceration.
On this episode, we're talking about jobs, and we're talking about way more than just making license plates.
They still do that in prison.
They still do that in prison. God.
Well, there's a lot of work that needs to happen in prison, and some jobs are official.
And some are not.
Hey, Nige.
Yes, Erlon?
You didn't hear this from me, but Normal Gossip is back for its sixth season.
Oh, nice.
Join host Kelsey McKinney as she shares the juiciest gossip from the real world. Each episode, she's joined by a special guest, and you might recognize a couple this season from our Radiotopia family.
Normal Gossip, named one of the best podcasts of the year by Time Magazine and Vulture. It's out now on all your favorite podcast platforms. New episodes starting April 17th. Hey, Erlon, you know I'm going to tune in because you know I love gossip.
I know.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too. With the Name Your Price tool from Progressive, it works just the way it sounds.
You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So, New York, you've actually had a lot of jobs since you've been in prison. In fact, I would even say you've had a career working behind bars. So, let's just go over your resume here.
Oh, yeah. A lot of different jobs.
I see your first job was a prison law clerk. What do you mean, law clerk?
Basically, a law clerk hands out the books in the law library.
Okay.
And they help guys make copies of their legal petitions to mail to the courts.
So, how did you get that job? And how does anybody get a job in prison?
So I got that job by being a pest. I signed up for a law library so much just to use it that they got tired of me bothering them and said, you might as well just work here.
Interesting. Okay. Is that how most people get a job in prison?
Nah. Most people get assigned a job.
And what if you get assigned to a job you don't like?
Well, you can't just quit.
Mm-hmm.
You can try to get a job change or you can try to get unassigned and not work at all.
Okay. So you ended up a law clerk and I've got a few questions for you.
Okay. Shoot.
First of all, was it a 9-to-5? And what was your commute like?
It was 8 hours. It wasn't exactly 9-to-5.
Okay,
they're on a
okay.
different schedule. Everything's around the count. But my commute was to get handcuffed and take a walk with an officer to A yard from B yard.
Every day?
Yep. Every day I went to work.
God, that is not what
there
I was expecting.
There's no FM radio on the way.
Okay, we're going to get back to your resume in a bit. But first, let's bring in some of the other voices of San Quentin's workforce.
I cook food for the main population, whatever they ask me to cook, pancakes, waffles.
I am working currently in the bakery.
Eggs, scrambled eggs.
Biscuits, make the cakes.
Collectively, we cook about 15,000 at least. pancakes once every weekend.
I'm the hedge groundkeeper in front of Garden Chapel. I take care of the plants. I prune, I cut, I mow the lawn.
I edge it.
I prune the trees.
I do a lot.
I rebuild the toilet, flush valves in the toilets, and I fix the sinks.
We do a lot of the repairs around here.
Unclog drains. And
anything having to do with wood, sometimes metal.
Anything to do with the plumbing.
I clean toilets for a living. They real shiny. Everybody likes when I clean them, right?
I work as a teacher assistant, grading students' work, help them around with math.
I work in the library. I really help to educate people.
I'm a material handling supervisor. I take all the truckloads that come in, inventory that come in, and then when we get our shop orders, I distribute out the shop orders out to the shop.
Well, they build chairs, and I make sure that the quality of the chair is sufficient enough where a customer is not going to complain or send it back.
I do all the cleaning from the toilets to the ground to the ceiling.
I'm a coder in the Last Miles Code 7370 coding program.
So, there are a lot of different jobs inside San Quentin. Some of them sound really hard and tedious, like working in the kitchen. That has got to be rough.
Yeah, I would not work in there. Never. But they actually have a few plus jobs around here.
Like what?
Like that guy that does computer coding?
Mm-hmm.
That's a sweet gig, but jobs like that are rare.
You know what? You have one of those rare jobs. What about podcasting?
This is not no plus job, nah. This is hard work. Interviewing and editing.
Okay, but it is rewarding.
Oh, it's awesome. Awesome. But you know something?
What?
There's another job around here that you would love, Notch.
Oh, yeah? What's that?
Well, I know in your other life, you're a photographer.
Yes, true.
Well, this guy is, too.
So, I walk around every 30 minutes and announce I'm taking pictures.
Officially, David Jarrell is what we call a porter. And in prison, porters do pretty much everything. Clean up, move stuff around.
And because he works in visiting, he is the person who takes pictures of people on their visits.
But those pictures are not free.
Nope.
You pay for a picture with a ducat.
Which is like a ticket.
And each ducat costs $2.
After I take the picture, 10 minutes later, I got the pictures printed and I hand it back to you. It's a little 4x6. For the most part, it takes each person about 4 or 5 different tries for them to like the pictures, especially the ladies. I'm like, I'm just taking the picture, lady. It's not my fault. I just got to keep my mouth shut in there. Okay, I'll retake it.
Spoken like a real photographer. You got to figure out how to get those people to relax for the camera.
I'm a very social person. I don't take things personally. I understand people have bad days sometimes, and, you know, I've almost gotten in fights with a couple people just because they felt I disrespected their visitor or something like that, but I've had to pull them aside and just talk to them about it, and, you know, we shake hands afterwards. It's all good. Honestly, though, visiting is the one thing that's kept me sane. You know, I get to see people smile and see their families, some tears. When people get to hug their families, hug their kids, play with them. Yeah, I don't know this guy's name, but, he came in a few months ago. First time he saw his baby. He got locked up while his wife was pregnant. But, you know, he's just got tears going down his face and just looking at his baby sleeping. So, you know, that's where I get my peace at.
So do you see this? One day, a guy's in a visiting room with his wife, and the next day, he's in a visiting room with his girlfriend?
No comment.
That's exactly what I want to know. Come on, dish the dirt.
I've almost got somebody caught before, so it was a Saturday. And, there's a lot of men in there that are bald, you know, but from behind, kind of looks the same as the other guy that I was talking to, you know? So he's like, hey, can I get a picture? I was like, oh, we're out of ducats. I'll get you next time you're in here. Well, I see him the next day. I'm like, hey, bro, I can get your picture from yesterday. His wife looks at him and goes, yesterday? I didn't come yesterday. So I had to look at him. I was like, oh, sorry, wrong guy.
Oops. I guess no good deed goes unpunished.
What do you mean, Naj? It all got worked out. It was the wrong guy. The wife understood.
You really do live in a fairy tale world. Okay, but more importantly, listeners might be wondering, how much does Dave earn? I mean, he doesn't pocket the money families pay to get their pictures taken.
he doesn't get a dime out of that money. It all goes to the prison system. And Dave's take home is something different.
I make 15 cents an hour.
15 cents an hour.
We asked other guys what they make.
How much I make an hour? 60 cents an hour.
I'm a cook, and I make 24 cents an hour.
18 cents an hour.
80 cents an hour.
I make 13 cents an hour.
Oh, man, I get 24 cents an hour.
My timely wage I get is
60 cents an hour.
11 to 18 cents an hour, somewhere around there. I got to double check.
11 cents an hour, maybe 10 cents.
I make 65 cents an hour. I work as a quality control officer.
13 cents an hour.
I work in the main kitchen. I only make 6 cents an hour.
So guys earn very little in prison, but there is an entirely different category of wage earner here at San Quentin.
My name is John Levin. I am a software engineer in the Last Miles joint venture coding program, and I make $17.88 an hour.
Whoa, $17.88? That's basically 18 bucks an hour.
Right, but there are not many coders. They're like rarer than freaking unicorns or something.
Okay. Well, that could change because the Last Mile is trying to expand to other prisons. And basically what they're trying to do is to get people inside up to date with technology so that when they get out, they have more marketable skills.
And man, is that really needed.
Absolutely.
But in any other case, guys only make between 5 cents and around a dollar an hour.
And that doesn't sound like much at all. So we asked Dave, the photographer, how many hours he'd have to work to buy a $6 case of soups.
And by soups, we mean top ramen noodles, standard prison fare, 24 per case.
100 hours.
100 hours for a case of ramen soups.
That's like 2.5 weeks of full-time work.
So how much did you get paid for your legal library job in New York?
It wasn't $18 an hour. It's more like, I think it was something like 32 cents.
All right. Well, let's have a look at that resume again. Your second prison job was as a teacher's assistant.
Yep.
Did you get fired from the law library?
Nah. So after 2 years, they rotate you out that job because they don't want you to be over familiar with the free staff.
Okay. We've explained this in other episodes, but let's do it again for new listeners. Free staff are people like me who come to work in the prison. And overfamiliarity, well, that's just getting too close with people and developing friendships that might compromise security.
Is your job dangerous?
It could be. It could be dangerous because if we say the wrong thing to a certain person, we don't know how they're going to react, and they might take a flight on us. We had to watch out for that.
Jamie Acosta works in R&R.
R&R is receiving and release. In New York, I guess it can be your happy place or your sad place.
I mean, it's all smiles, all happiness when you're going through there to get home. But when you first arrive at San Quentin, it's heavy.
You go there to get processed out.
And you go there to get processed in.
So I'm coming in for the first time. What would you do for me? And what exactly do I get? Give me the list.
Okay, so we get your blue shirt, your blue pants, your white shirt, your white boxers, socks. Then for beds, you get your sheets, your blankets, and you get your hygiene, you get your toothbrush, toothpaste, soap bar, comb, and toilet paper.
And one of each thing? Just like one pair of shorts?
One set of each.
So that's officially what Jamie does, but there's a whole nother layer to Jamie's job.
My unofficial job is a word to the transgender community. Means that when every time a transgender enters the prison, I'll be the first one to see them because they are comfortable with me because I'm also a transgender. So when I see them, I will introduce myself, explain them how to get their materials, what they need for being a transgender here at San Quentin. I mean, getting their own clothes because we wear different clothes than the male general population, and their rights as a transgender female in a male prison. Try to calm them down and so they know that there's people here that they could connect with.
Mm-hmm.
So what's that like? How are you received?
It gets me more attention because a lot of the LGBTQ community knows where I'm at and they're comfortable talking with me because I introduce them and they see how I am. It makes me feel good that at least our community knows they have someone to talk to without worrying about anything else.
Do you think they're surprised when they get here and they're like, oh, I see people I recognize?
To some people, it's a surprise when they see me when they first come into R&R because they don't expect to see a transgender working on R&R and being the first person inmate they see coming in off the bus. And when people are from the community, that I know it's so easy to spot them because as soon as they see me, their attitudes change.
What about the opposite? Do you have people that see you and are like, oh?
Surprisingly, I don't experience that much. Some of them flip out, going crazy, what the heck, what type of yard is this, or what type of prison is, because some people don't understand the transgender life. My name is Jamie Acosta, and I work at Receive and Release, and there it will take me 40 hours to make enough money to buy a case of soups.
So New York. From what I understand, you're supposed to have a job here, but I can't help but notice there seem to be guys who don't work.
Yeah, you got your yard bums who just hang out on the yard all day, working out, playing dominoes and pinochle. And there's also guys that are just, like, too old to work.
And then there's some guys like Les. He's not a yard bum. He just doesn't work.
Have you worked while you were in prison?
Not here. I did all kinds of jobs on my last term.
So how do you take care of yourself here? Like if you need a case of soups or some deodorant, some toothpaste?
I got to hustle. Right. If you come into prison and you don't have a hustle, you're broke.
Really? Can you talk about that?
I draw.
Ah, you're an artist.
Sometimes.
Like what do you draw?
Whatever feels.
So at this point in our conversation, Les pulled up his sleeve and showed us a drawing.
All right, that's cool.
How many people have a hustle in here?
I would have to say anybody that's done more than one term.
And how do you figure out what to do?
You observe look for a talent. Like I knew I wanted to cut hair, so I took the cutting hair right away.
Do you still cut hair in New York, or is your hustle a full-time gig?
Hair hustle is all I do. I do not cut hair anymore. I'm out of the barber business.
But name some of the side hustles guys have going on.
Oh, there's sewing and typing and cooking and fixing things and drawing. We even got a chiropractor, a stylist, a clothes washer, a paralegal.
Oh my God, okay, there's tons and tons.
And those are the only side hustles I know about, Naj.
Right. Okay, so I'm guessing most guys are pretty quiet about their side hustles. At least, I don't hear much about them. But there is one guy I notice who appears to be a walking, talking billboard for his side hustle. We heard him at the top of the podcast.
My name is Billy Terry, a.k.a. a cowboy.
Yeehaw! Cowboy thinks of himself as an old-time neighborhood peddler.
My job is catering to all you guys' needs. Whatever it is that you're looking for that you don't have, my job is to find it for you.
Okay, New York, I have noticed Cowboy on the yard for years, but I've never spoken to him until now.
Yep, on the yard, he's hard to miss.
He is.
It must have something to do with his hats.
I've got many hats. I call them Monopoly top hats. You know, I have like three of them. And I have like a cowboy hat, pretty much like the Wild Wild West hat that he wear, James West wear, like it's pretty much like a gambler.
And I notice you always have something around your waist. Is that some kind of a corset or is a back brace or what's going on with that?
It kind of reminds me of like a vest where I can sport my pocket watch, my little trinkets like chopstick, little silver coins or whatever. But my style is different and I'm my own person. I'm a leader. And because of that, I can wear my hair any kind of way I like it, to the left, to the right, wild, whipped up, unique. I'm just cool like that.
You can hear it in his voice. Cowboy is one persuasive salesman.
Is there anything you can't sell?
No, there's not.
Nothing.
I'm sorry. And it's fascinating to me, and I blow my own mind to know that I can actually sell anything.
Like what?
So
but like, what are your?
One time he tried to sell me the suntan lotion, Coppertone suntan lotion. But I didn't know it at the time, but they started giving them out at the canteen for free.
Did you buy that suntan lotion, New York?
No, I didn't fall for that. I already had some.
Thank God.
But Cowboy has a gift for not only selling, but for finding stuff that someone might want to buy. People throw away all sorts of things. You'll be like, unbelievable. Did he really throw that radio on the trash can because he pressed play and it didn't come on, so he threw it away? Well, I put some fresh batteries up in there and pressed play. And did you know that thing started having me dancing all over the place? I said, wow. First thing I saw was dollar bill signs. I said, somebody's going to end up with this radio. Now, I got it for free. It didn't cost me nothing. Come straight out of the dumpster. So what would be a good price for me to give this radio to somebody who has nothing to listen to? I figure $5 or $6 is better than anything, right? So why not? I got a TV right now. It's a high-tech flat screen TV. But sometimes these guys are real difficult when I try to sell my TVs. I like selling stuff in a record-breaking time. I've got no time to be keeping TVs for hours. I want to be able to get rid of this TV in an hour. So I challenge myself. So I have a high-tech TV, and it's a 13-inch, and it's got speakers. And sometimes when they ignore me, I sort of throw in that it also picks up late night porn, okay, which it doesn't. Okay, it really doesn't, but some people actually believe it. And it's shocking to know that they believe this. It makes them buy it much quicker, okay? And then the TV become much more expensive than what I really want. So I just usually tease them because I know I can get laughs and giggles as I walk them down the trail. I'm pretty sure deep down inside, though, they know that TV don't pick up late night porn. I'm a kind of strange little character to most folks. It's like I'm weird, I'm unique, and I'm different. And I'm like an outsider, pretty much a loner. So the only way I keep from being alone is by people needing things. I do it because of the simple fact that my conscience and my pride, it won't allow me to fail. I can't see myself asking anyone for anything, like not even a soup. To ask someone for a soup to me, it hurts deeply. And it's embarrassing because I know my potential level is much greater than that. And so when I wake up in the morning, I feel it's time for me to make money.
The last guy we talked to, he had to work 100 hours
yes.
to make enough money to buy a case mm-hmm. of soups.
Yeah. Well, I have a problem with that. Okay, that's unbelievable. I can make a case of soups within 30 minutes or less.
After the break, we'll be back with more about jobs in prison.
Including jobs that come with a state pension.
Where they got jobs like that at? Can I get a job like that?
I knew my assignment was a tower. And it was a tower at Wasco. It was an evening shift. I remember approaching that shift thinking, man, I'm going to be on point. My eyes are going to be open, going to be peeled. And when I get up there, I realize what I'm supervising is the backside of some housing units in a staff parking lot.
That's Ralph Diaz. He's talking about his first day on the job that incarcerated people like me could never get hired for. A prison guard, a correctional officer, a CEO.
And COs do a lot of different jobs at the prison.
And Ralph Diaz, he's done a whole bunch of them.
He started as a CO in 1991, guarding that parking lot, and was later moved to the education area, where he guarded people, not buildings.
And in education, he worked side by side with the incarcerated people who also worked there.
They worked for me, and you really get to know them real well. And you talk to them, and they do their job, and you know, you ask them about the game last night, you talk about a whole lot of stuff, and it's real friendly, but then...
But then when Diaz saw one guy he worked with back in his housing unit, it was another story.
And when I get in the building, and I'm like, hey, man, hey, what's going on, man? What's the program here tonight? And it was a different ball game. I didn't realize that the work life was quite a bit different from his living life in the unit. He wasn't disrespectful, but it wasn't the same. And I had to respect that. And I checked myself pretty quick because I recognize, okay, the people around here are not the people that I'm with during the day. This is a different group of cats here. So I had to respect him for that.
After being a CO on the main line, Ralph Diaz became a counselor.
And that's not what you think it is. There's no therapy. It's not a self-help type counseling, psychology thing.
It's the person that pushes your paperwork around. They make sure you get put up for job assignments. They handle processing for transfers to another prison and stuff like that.
And Diaz told us if he had stayed as a CO on the main line, he doesn't know if he would have made it.
There were days where I thought, I don't know if I could do this for 30 years. That's why I think for me, the greatest thing I did was become a counselor.
Was it the violence? Was it the bullying? Was it knowing the worst that people were capable of? Like, what was it that was so...
I think a lot of it was the average person doesn't have to engage in conflict or verbal tension on a daily basis. So you want to do a basic thing like, hey, we're going to run yard today. And for some reason, the yard is delayed 5 minutes. Then you get a housing unit full of people hollering at you, calling you out your name. And then when the doors open, you know, as they walk by, you're hearing it. You know, as a young person, if you're not equipped, it does take its toll. It does. You know, you start reflecting, hey, I'm 27 years old. I've got how many more years of this? Like, wow, I don't know if I want to do this. So those are the decisions you think, man, maybe I want to go back to school, be a teacher. Maybe I want to go do something else.
Well, he did do something else, actually. A few something elses, including being a warden.
And today, Ralph Diaz is the secretary of the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, which means he is everybody's boss.
But his experience back when he was a CO of working side by side with incarcerated people is not unusual in a level 2 prison like San Quentin. And that's what we're going to get into next, the collaboration between workers on the inside and workers from the outside.
Yeah, my name is Jeff Huff.
And what's your job?
My job here at San Quentin right currently is fire chief of San Quentin Prison Fire Department. 4 captains that are paid and myself as fire chief. And then we have the inmate firefighters.
So for weeks I kept waiting to catch this ghost called Huff. And I would see him in traffic and I'd be like, okay, there's my window. And then I would freeze up and go, no, not now, not now. Then finally one day I just walked up and introduced myself.
He came in, started right off, you know, on the right foot. So, you know, it seemed just got a good impression. You know, I felt good about him, but you never know.
As an inmate firefighter, like, I have to prove myself, right? Like, I have to show that this guy with the freckles and the tattoos on his face, who probably doesn't have the best file, is serious about being a firefighter.
Sandy Rashid Lockhart is serving his last months of a 17-year sentence. He works for Chief Huff in very unusual circumstances for a prison.
Right. Chief Huff runs the San Quentin Fire Station, but he's also a CO. And what might be surprising is that when they are on the job, they actually live together, like in any other firehouse.
What's that change like? Like going from locking them in a cell,
you know,
next door neighbors now.
It's not
your roommate.
It's a very similar camaraderie as working in a regular any other firehouse, except for there's definitely a lot harder line on a lot of things. We trust these guys. We trust them on calls. They could be saving us just as well as we could be saving them.
Rashid's been at San Quentin for 7 years. He got a job at the firehouse 2 years ago. And the firehouse where Rashid and the 10 other firefighters live is just outside the walls of San Quentin.
Like in the firehouse, I imagine it's a lot of freedom. Like you don't sleep in a cage, right?
Yeah, it's like a halfway house. So we have our own rooms. Man, like I'm in a real room. You know, I got a cabinet, you know, and dressers. And I remember playing with the dresser drawer, opening and closing it, like, wow, this is crazy. I'm serious.
What other stuff like that?
I had a window in my room. I remember sliding the window back and forth for a while. Yeah, it's crazy.
And you can shut your door? Living.
No, we have curtains. They don't let us have doors.
Okay.
Almost.
Now, what about the bathroom situation?
Your own individual shower with a door on it.
You can turn the hot water on and off?
Yep.
Can you
runs
make
all
the
day.
Water the temperature you want?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was a big thing, too. I remember sitting in the shower for it. Matter of fact, I still do that. I did that right before I came out here.
Oh, wow.
Like, man, I really appreciate this.
The work these guys do is no different than what a normal fire station does. They respond to calls in their area.
And that area includes inside the prison and just outside in San Quentin Village, which is a small neighborhood where some people who work for the prison live.
And when there's a medical emergency inside the prison, Rashid and his colleagues are on it.
How many calls do you get a day?
Oh, man. So sometimes we may have like 4 calls in one day, 5 calls in the middle of the night, and then we won't have anything for a month. You know, it all depends. And, you know, with this population here, because it is an aging and dying population, we get a lot of calls.
So it's a 24-hour job.
In 24 hours, yeah. I've been there almost 2 years now, and I've seen more dead bodies than I've ever seen in my life.
What do you mean? People are dying here all the time?
It's an aging, dying population, yeah.
How many people have died since you've been on the job?
I've lost count.
I remember there was one year when we did an article in the newspaper. It was 21, and then 2 died before the year was over. So 23 people died in 1 year.
Yeah, I've lost count.
He may have lost count, but Rashid has noticed how different parts of the prison deal with death.
So when somebody dies on the tier north block, right, the look on everybody's face is like, damn, because the thought is, I need to outlive this prison sentence. Whereas when we deal with a dead body on death row, they talk to him when they die. All right, let's say his name is Lunch Meat, right? All right, Lunch Meat, I'll see you on the other side, you stupid motherfucker. I'll see you when I get there. So the realities are different, right?
And the guys in North Block, like nobody wants to look?
No, because it's. I think it reminds them of their own mortality. Everybody wants to outlive these sentences. So for the guys on death row, it's like, you know, he finally made it out. And then for the guys on the main line, it's like he didn't make it out.
Like anybody who does this kind of work, Rashid sees some really hard stuff.
And just heads up here, this gets pretty graphic.
One of the calls that stands out to me the most was we had a guy that jumped off like the 4th tier and he had clipped his head on the way down.
What was it like when you got to the actual scene?
It was a mess. It was chaotic. They had just started CPR on him and his brains were hanging out. And then walking up and seeing him, you know, basically looking up and seeing somebody pumping on his chest. And I remember tapping the first, taking over CPR, and feeling him pretty much like crushed underneath my hands because he had jumped from the 4th tier. But you know, the sad and unfortunate thing is you could tell he was brain dead, but when he left San Quentin, he was alive. We had brought him back. So he had actually started breathing on his own, but he was, for the most part, brain dead. And that's something I can't ever shake. Like, I still see the brain. I still see him breathing, but not alive.
So when you're in that kind of high trauma situation, what actually happens to time? Like, how do you experience time?
You don't. You lose it. I mean, if there is any sense of time, it's what's happening underneath you.
I usually can't hear. I can see, but I can't hear very well because of my ears. Like, there's this ringing because it's such a focus. And I noticed that happening on the serious accidents. So hyper-focused that your senses change.
This is Amika Mota. She was on a fire crew at Central California's Women Facility in Chowchilla, where she had similar experiences working closely with CO firefighters.
So did you have a different kind of relationship with the fire captain / COs than you did with the COs inside the actual prison?
The captains did 24-hour shifts. So, like, you know, bedtime comes around and the captains are, like, in the kitchen at 10 o'clock at night in their slippers and their pajamas. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, it's a little different. Like, we're seeing them not all suited up like COs.
Yeah. And did it make you see correctional officers in a different light?
No.
No, it didn't change
No,
that.
They were the cops.
And do you think they treated you differently? Like, did they see you as a colleague?
On the fire ground. The firefighting was the hardest thing I've ever done, like, physically. Besides giving birth, but, you know.
Yeah, so what did that do to your, like, just your psyche and your self-esteem to constantly be doing things you didn't think you could do?
It just builds you up, especially like in prison. You know, it's the things I relied on before that were my workouts in the yard or the books I would read or, you know, like I would, those were like accomplishments. And then this became like this thing that, you know, we were engaging with people too, and like this feeling like, you know, you perform CPR and somebody would survive and we had to win, and it was like, you know, the family just loved up, you know, the firefighters. It was beautiful. It was a good thing.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, keep getting in a situation where you're bringing people back to life.
Yeah.
What does that feel like?
That's a rush. You talk about purpose, that's it. You know, that feeling of when that, and it's funny because they all do the same thing. It's always that that quick breath, and you feel it right underneath your hand. And it's a rush.
Wait, have you become more macho since you started this job?
If macho is confident, yeah.
Yeah, why?
Just because people depend on me. But then also my interactions with more free people has made me a lot more confident to where, you know, in here you're always indoctrinated to, you know, not make eye contact or get too familiar. You know, and out there it's different.
When he gets out in a year, Rashid would love to do on the outside what he does on the inside.
If I could, I'd be a first responder. That's hands down. I've never loved anything more in my life than doing this.
But there's a big barrier that he's up against and that Amika has already faced. A lot of times having a record can keep a person from getting that EMT license. And without that, it's extremely hard to get a job as a firefighter.
But those are things that have to change. And that's what I want the public to hear, is I want them to know how difficult it is for us when we come home. And we've been in people's homes doing medical calls. We've been in trusted positions, you know, fighting fires at COs' houses. And, like, they relied on us and trusted us. And then we're here and we're not trustworthy. And we're not, you know, like, all of these things don't matter anymore when we come home.
On our next episode, we're going to hear from men and women about getting jobs when they come home, and it's not always easy.
Not at all.
New York, most jobs in prison aren't firefighting, they aren't coding. Most of them are just hard work for little money. So why do it? Why do you do it?
Well, for me, I have a life sentence, and so if I just sit here and don't do anything with my time, I feel like a further waste of life, a further waste of time. I gotta have a reason to get up every day. I need purpose. I need meaning. I need something that's educational and fun to do. And there's one more reason why I do this job.
Oh, really? What is that?
I need the snack money.
So, New York, one more look at your resume. The final one on here is the new co-host and co-producer of Ear Hustle.
Best job I ever had, Naj. Best job I ever had.
Well, I sure like having you as my professional colleague.
Right back at you, Naj. I just want to thank Jerry Brown for sending Earlai home.
I was really sweating that. I'm glad it made you happy.
We're going to be all right, Naj. We're going to be all right. Thanks to everyone who spoke to us about jobs in prison. David Jarrell, Jamie Acosta, Leslie Nelson, Cowboy, and Chief Huff.
And also Sandy Rashid Lockhart, Amika Mota, all the guys on the yard, and a special thanks to Secretary Ralph Diaz. Ear Hustle is produced on the inside by myself, Nigel Poor, Rasan New York Thomas, Pat Macedi Miller, and John Yaya Johnson.
And on the outside by Earlonne Woods and Bruce Wallace.
This episode was scored with music by Antoine Williams, David Jassy,
Rashid Zinneman, E. Phil Phillips, as well as
Aaron Showtime Taylor.
Great job, guys.
Aaron Wade is our digital producer, Curtis Fox, our senior producer, Julie Shapiro is our executive producer for Radiotopia.
We want to thank Warden Ron Davis, and as you know, every episode has to be approved by this guy here.
Hello, Ear Hustle listeners. I may sound like I'm in a distant away from the studio, because I am. I'm on vacation, working in prison. However, these ear hustle people have hit me up and they've hounded me and they say, Sam, there are millions upon millions and maybe billions of ear hustle listeners who are out there who want their episode on time. And so I had to listen, and it's interesting to dive in and see how people work and learn many different things and all that. But there's a time to work, there's a time to be off, and I'm actually off. And so on my vacation from afar, this is Lieutenant Sam Robinson, the public information officer at San Quentin State Prison. I will approve this episode.
Next time on Ear Hustle. Like we said, we're going to hear about jobs post-incarceration. It could be a struggle, and sometimes the struggle dates back a long time.
After that, my little sister pulled me to the side and let me know that I was being let go from the Easter Bunny position.
How long did you last on the job?
Like 35 minutes, I think.
This podcast was made possible with support from the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, working to redesign the justice system by building power and opportunity for communities impacted by incarceration.
Check out our website, earhustlesq.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter, see pictures of people in our stories, and it's also a place to buy Ear Hustle sticker packs, mugs, and t-shirts, so check it out. And also follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at earhustlesq. And remember, we're asking you listeners to remix our theme song.
That's right. We want to hear what you come up with. So make your own rendition, put your own twist on it, make it crack, make it smile, make it pop, make it lock, make it boogie.
Just go to our website, earhustlesq.com, and download the elements from our theme song and make a version of your own. You can then send it to us, and we might just play it on our next episode. And the deadline is what, New York?
August 31st, and I heard we already got some great submissions.
Oh, yes. I got my harp.
I want some 808s. Ear Hustle is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a collection of the best podcasts around. Hear more at radiotopia.fm. I'm Rahsaan New York Thomas.
And I'm Nigel Poor.
Thanks for listening.
My name is Sandy Rashid Lockhart. I am an inmate firefighter. I have to work 16 hours to buy a case of soups.
Radiotopia.